SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday. Travers goers. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. The storms, including tornadoes, are behind us. Absolutely beautiful. And the first, you always get to middle, late August, the first morning where you wake up and you feel that chill in the air. It's pretty funny. And Tina remarked on it too. Sometimes it's coolish in the summer up here in mornings. And it's one of the reasons the horses enjoy it. But this was the morning where I said, ooh, there's that little extra frosty breeze that you feel, and you say, ugh. the summer is seeing the finish line, and that's always true when Travers rolls around too. Travers shows up, and you know that the season, at least up here, is drawing to a close, and it just feels like everything is in place for a tremendous Travers weekend. And I'll include today the New York Bred Showcase, always a fun card, and no exception today. It's a good group, and the two-year-olds are interesting, and you know all the various divisions. And this has become—I don't know how many years this has been going on now—probably 6-7 years easily. They tried a couple different things on the Fridays before Travers, and then when the format went to the big supersized stakes day, the opportunity to find a home. I remember it was on, they tried it, I think, on Sundays at one time. But Dave Grenning is going to join us here almost immediately, and Dave will remember, maybe. Some of it all starts to blur together. We've got a tremendous lineup. I just sent it out on Twitter, and it'll be almost all Travers. We'll hit on a little bit out west because the Pat O'Brien tomorrow, I was about to say the grade one sprint, but it's not. It's the grade two sprint now. And then, interestingly, the shared belief, which had been intended and seemed to be, you know, setting up as the Omaha Beach return, that's on Sunday at Del Mar. And I'll slip this in before we dive into Saratoga Whole Hog. But the shared belief ends up being a return for Improbable. Yeah, Improbable turns up in this spot, and, you know, Baffert obviously, you know, moving things around a little bit, and here's Improbable in the shared belief trying to get ready for the fall, and of course last seen in the Preakness. So Improbable, you know, kind of takes the starring role from Omaha Beach, who needed a few more days after getting a little bit of that illness that was spreading around the back stretch at Del Mar. And it also hit Baffert with game winner. So everybody moving back in the right direction. One thing also that transpired in this field for shared belief, King Jack for Jerry Hollendorfer and Michael Stinson, the Jimmy Creed colt, he is going to participate as well. King Jack shows up here. He was thinking about coming east for the Alan Jerkins, and instead stays at home and runs in the shared belief, going the mile, and a good performance and a 99 buyer at the beginning of Del Mar. So King Jack stays at home, and it does feel like it's a matchup principally between those two. We'll see what Steve Miotti does with Lieutenant Dan, who is entered both Saturday and Sunday. He's in the Pat O'Brien potentially. So Miotti's got to make a decision. And Lieutenant Dan coming off a very nice win in the restricted real good deal earlier in the meet. Or he might stretch out to the mile. And he's done a bunch of different. He's a nice horse, Lieutenant Dan. He's they made $300,000. Very quietly for Nick Alexander. Can't say no. So they're going to have to say no to one of the other races. I love it. Dave Greinig standing by at Saratoga. And we talked last week ahead of a really entertaining Alabama day. Dave Greinig, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Excellent, and would love to be there, but we'll save it for tomorrow. And, Dave, before we look ahead at Travers Day, let's pick off a couple of notes about last week, your postscript to Alabama and the Lake Placid photo, dead heat, and more.
The photo dead heat that wasn't, I don't know if they have lights there or they didn't turn them on or what, but it's, I think it was a little bit of an embarrassment there that you can't, at this day and age, figure out. Who won the actual race, and they have to call it a dead heat between Regal Glory and Barranca. It looked like to me Regal Glory was in slightly in front there, but in this day and age, we have to be able to get this right. They did what the fairest thing was for the bettors, but it's still come on. It's 2019. The Alabama. Kudos to Chad Brown to getting Dunbar Road to be prepared to run that type of race, going a mile and a quarter. I was a little skeptical about it, if she would go that far, or at least go that far better than Point of Honor did. And now those two basically will probably be headed toward older fillies and mares down the road. I don't know that either one comes back. Well, Dunbar Road definitely won't come back in the Cotillion because Chad's got Garana for that one. And Point of Honor, in my conversation with George Weaver after the race, he was more like, I'll nominate to the Cotillion, but I don't know that I want to run back that quickly. So maybe they'll, if he wants to keep her two turns, I would imagine a race like the Spinster against Olders in, early October at Keeneland might be a spot.
Yeah, that, which makes sense. Well, the Saturday card gave way to a race that hasn't gotten enough attention, and didn't get a chance to reach out to Nacho Correas this week, but Blue Prize prevails in that Summer Colony. And then, we get into the final section of the meet, and a couple of notable things from the last couple of days, Dave. And yesterday, I haven't told everybody yet, but indeed, Jonathan Shepherd sweeps the grade ones over the hurdles, and Winston C in dominant fashion yesterday. So congratulations to Jonathan, who had had a couple of quiet Saratoga summers and then flexes some Shepherd muscle this summer.
Yeah, that was nice to see that horse come back and win. It seems like a quirky stat to me why the AP Smithwick winner has taken 20 years for the Smithwick winner to come back and win the New York Turf Riders. I understand that they do pick up weight, but I was trying to beat this horse just on that factor alone. I guess it's bound to happen eventually, but it's like, I don't want to take 3-5 on a horse that's, trying to do something that hasn't done in 2 decades. And I think I went with Jack Fisher's Jibril Alfaro. I know I butchered that name, but Winston C. just a really solid jumper and, fairly fresh too. It's only had 3 starts this year, I believe. And, as we look forward to, schedule for them, either at Belmont in fall or Far Hills, he looks like he should be, a major player in that division, and Jonathan Shepherd, that was his 15th New York Turf Riders Cup. I'm actually lobbying to make it, call the Jonathan Shepherd Cup, because that's what he's owned it. He should have his name on.
There was the year after Tom Voss passed, the first running of the Turf Riders Cup that one year, and it was dedicated, to Tom. It's an interesting concept, actually, and Jonathan may say, let's wait a while until it's a memorial.
I actually think we should do it before then. Actually,
I agree. I don't disagree with that.
I don't want to call it the John Shepherd Memorial. Call it John Shepherd and let John Shepherd win the John Shepherd. Maybe present himself the trophy. I don't know.
I don't disagree with that. Because really, the only race that the most notable race is the Eddie D. For somebody that's alive and
right.
That Hammer created. That's pretty funny. One race from one race from yesterday, Dave, I got to get some thoughts. It was that fascinating mile and an eighth maiden special weight. And indeed, it was the heavily pedigreed player for Jack Oxley and Mark Cassie, Enforceable, that prevails here under Jose Ortiz. This is the brother of New Year's Day, Mohamed and Kingly, and took him a while to put it all together. But this has always been, this mile and an eighth maiden race, late at Saratoga, has been a bellwether for success down the road.
It has.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
It has.
I think Todd Fletcher found his Belmont horse in that race, Portros. If you watched him finish up the rail and then gallop out past the field, it looked like he wants the mile and a half maiden race if they rate one. We'll see. The weird thing is, where do you go from here? You know, because there isn't going to be another mile and eighth race for this type, and for the winners anyway, until the Remsen. So you might have to cut back to mile 16th and something like the Breeders' Futurity or something like that. But we'll see how it plays out. I think experience and, as you mentioned, pedigree probably has a key to success there. And we'll see how Enforceable does going forward. I actually thought the other half of the entry was going to be the preferred one, Lucky Curlin, but Enforceable got the job done.
Well, and it was running late at the end and kind of chugged along as horses will do, 2 year olds at this time of year, making that attempt. And I'm just pulling up, just reaching for into the formulator system, into the machine. And I will momentarily tell everybody they're hanging with bated breath as to no figure yet. Andy has not put the buyer up yet. You know what, though? I will mention this. The race that Enforceable comes out of, which was the early season, the July 13th, sixth race, the mile and a 16th turf maiden special, he's the third winner to come out of that race, Dave. Decorated Invader and Our Country both came back to win already.
There you go. So I'm sure we'll see some of those horses in the... with anticipation this week, coming week.
There you go. Exactly.
It's
a double draw today, right? Or no, double draw.
No. Today they draw for Wednesday and then Sunday for Thursday and Friday. No draw tomorrow. No draw
all right.
Travers
Day. They're taking off Travers Day. Exactly. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. That gets us to today and tomorrow. Any thoughts on the New York Bred Showcase card today?
It's a typical deep card, usually with good betting opportunities. It's been so long since I wrote about these races that I pretty much forgot about them. But I guess the Albany has the New York Derby 1-2 finishers and Bankett, and not that Brady. Who knew that the Withers would be the key race for the Saratoga big weekend with Not That Brady running in the it was second to Tax running in the Albany, and Tax being one of the players in the Travers. That race pretty much comes down to those two. I'm expecting, although I don't have confirmation yet, maybe you do, that Voodoo Song will scratch today out of the West Point and probably point for something downstate. I'm also expecting 55 to scratch today and run in the Boston Spa tomorrow with, now that Rushing Fall is, kind of being on the shelf for a little bit. So I think there'll be some changes to those races. It's definitely, as soon as you get, it'd be paid. Beneficial to get the scratches as early as you can to re-handicap them, some of those races.
Friday, and I asked this question off the top of the show. When did this start? Because I know we did it on Sundays for a while, or at least a couple of times.
I want to say it's 4 years ago. I want to say
okay.
This is the fourth or fifth one of these up here. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I want to say it's the fourth or fifth New York Showcase on Saturday. Friday.
Yeah, it makes it's a good spot for it. It works, and these races are always competitive and interesting, and looking forward to today. And of course, the weather cooperated, and turf should be absolutely perfect through the weekend after. Among other things, a tornado touching down. I had to come into town last night, and I saw that farm, on 29 where the tornado went through and cut a swath. It's unbelievable.
Wow. I didn't see that. That's
crazy. Let's start with the Travers and work our way back. And, you know, this is a group that is really interesting. There's a lot of quality on the top half. And then there's some horses that are trying to make late season incursions. Dave, your thoughts going into the 150th running of the summer feature?
I think it's put up or shut up time for Tacitus. He had a good spring with the Tampa Derby and the Wood Memorial, and I thought he ran respectable in the Kentucky Derby, and he was favored in the Belmont, and both the Belmont and the Jim Dandy, and just didn't get it done. I thought maybe he was the victim of an overconfident ride by Jose Ortiz in the Belmont. He was five wide route, really. And Sir Winston got a terrific ride from Joel Rosario and beat him to the wire. Unfortunate circumstances in the Jim Dandy when he stumbled badly at the start. He still ran a courageous race. I thought to only get beat three quarters of a length. Bill Mott is putting blinkers on him, and I'm going to try and put a line through the first blinkers 3% over the last 2 years because I do like this horse. And his equipment changes have not paid off per se, but the horse seems to be training very well. I think he's going to get a good trip. I'm hoping that he, gets into the race a little bit with the blinkers. He doesn't have to be speedy, but he just have him break with the field and, take up residence in the, maybe the second, third flight, good with tax out there and looking at bikinis out there and maybe somebody else, maybe Mucho Gusto. I don't know. Bob's got to have something up his sleeve here to send that horse here. But I think it's, Tacitus is turned to shine. Others in the race that I think are interesting, and I don't know what prices they'll be, but Highest Honors, very lightly raced horse, but I think with a lot of potential. It's currently, all three of his races have been very good, to be one of the truth. When he got beat in Keeneland, he was trying to come up the fence, and that got shut off. He came outside and made a run and just got beat. He beat a nice horse in Need Me in L.A. from Jimmy Jerkins in his maiden race, and then he was pretty solid in the Kerwin. And just watching him gallop the last couple mornings, I think he's ready to fire. How good he is, I don't know that we know that, but we could definitely find out on Saturday. Code of Honor, solid race in the Dwyer, has not run since. Still have a little question mark about the mile and a quarter, but he ran a very solid race in the Derby. Both Johnny D and Chug say that when Maximum Security came back over after he wore out, he kind of intimidated Code of Honor a little bit and took Johnny several strides to get him going again. With a cleaner trip, we'll see how he handles the mile and a quarter. And then the horse that we haven't seen because he's been training in Churchill, but is apparently lighting up the work tab there is Owendale, who should just get a ground saving trip. And you just wonder if there'll be enough pace for him. But those are the four that I'm kind of centering on when I look at the race.
I'm really not dissimilar. I ended up settling on Code of Honor, Tacitus, Owendale to, pick up some pieces. I mean, the pace scenario is really the question. And, Danny Gargan claimed that he's going for the lead from the 12 hole at the break. What is unusual, Dave, we've got a lineup here where, four of the horses that were going to drop out of it anyway and come with runs, they end up in the 1, 2, 4, and 5 holes. So most of the speed is lined up, from the middle field outward. What do you expect to see into the first turn?
I expect looking at bikinis to get away. They're running, and I expect I do expect Tax to at least break running and see where, see how it all unfolds from there. Where that puts him, he could be on the lead. I think he would like to sit off of looking at bikinis. If looking at bikinis does indeed go, I think both of those two, it'll be a cat and mouse game between Hyrad and Javier. It'll be very interesting to see who lets the other one have the lead and then how intent they are on pressing it and how fast they're forced to go early. But I don't see a ton of other speed in there. Maybe Baffert. Mucho Gusto has been on the lead in some of his races, but he hasn't seen it through. So I don't know if that's the best running style for him. He was off the pace in the Haskell, and he made a run at Maximum Security, and Maximum Security repelled him. But it just seemed like that was I know he lost, but that seemed like a better style for him. But maybe Bob has something, again, up his sleeve and wants to, put him into the race like he's done with Arrogate and, I believe, West Coast. So maybe that's the plan.
Well, and I'll tell you who the wild card is. Joel Rosario with Enforced, with him in between tax and looking at bikinis. It'll be very interesting to see how aggressive he is in coming forward and when he decides to drop over, because he has shown, you know, a remarkable ability in big fields to somehow save ground. And I'm sure that ideally that's what Kieran McLaughlin would like to see him do with Endorsed. And I think the catalyst here as to how things unfold into the turn and spilling onto the backstretch, the key is Rosario and what he does. That's going to be very interesting to see how difficult he makes it for Arad to his outside and even potentially, you know, to become a problem for Javier.
Yeah, I mean, Javier is, I don't know what Joel's going to do from there. You figure that he wants to get some kind of position away from there, but I don't know that he's going to want to on a lead. I mean, the one thing that you got to, you know, that probably bodes well for that horse is that was just his first time going a mile and eighth. First time going long. I mean, he had 1 3-quarter race this year, and then he went from 3/4 to a mile and eighth and ran a very respectable race. Now that he's got those races under his belt, you know, they can probably feel a little bit more comfortable doing whatever it is that they want. And I agree with you. I think he's going to have to get away from there and get some sort of position. But I don't know that he's going to want to get on the lead. I think he's going to love to fall into a third place scenario, you know, sitting third behind, looking at bikinis and tax go on with it.
Well, the Travers, always a highlight of the Saratoga season, and certainly tomorrow, a fascinating group, and we'll see how they, how they spill out and how they line up. Let's backwards through this sequence. The Sword Dancer, all things considered, Dave, you know, with Arlington just a couple of weeks ago, this is a nice addition to the Sword Dancer.
Yeah, I think it has a cut. It's a cut below. I mean, sure. You know, there, I don't know that the division's that deep. The chat horses that are in here aren't necessarily the upper echelon of his barn. He put Proven Reserves in there to be a rabbit. He's the one operation that seems to have gotten this rabbit thing down right. You know, he doesn't. Sometimes you see these guys, they go to the front, and the jockeys get the impression that, maybe I can win this if I slow it down. Chad gets it in his rider's head, but that's not the goal here. The goal here is to make sure the pace is right. So that the horses that are in there that are going to come from off the pace, like in Annals of Time, have something to run at. But saying that, that also helps the other closers in the race. And a horse that, I think ran a sneaky good race in the Bowling Green was Sadler's Joy. So, he was sixth. He was trying to come up the fence. And if you watch the replay, there were several strides there that he could not, he couldn't ride him. Yep. And he had to wait. And he still didn't get speed a length and a quarter in what was his first start of the year. So I thought that was a very solid effort. I'm not thrilled with the outside draw for that horse, but it's a long race. He's got plenty of time to get over, and I think second off the layoff with some speed in there to spread the field out, I think he's got a pretty big shot. Castellano takes off to get on, to stay on out of the time. You expected that, and then but you get Lascano, who's had a very good year, and Lascano worked the horse the other day. That one note, back in 2017 when he won this race, Leperu was replacing Castellano, and Leperu worked the horse before, in the work before the race. So maybe there's a little karma there with Sadler's Joy, and he's one of the price horses of the weekend that I kind of like a bit.
And I liked him in the Bowling Green, and indeed when they turned for home, Javier several times had to idle, and then when he got his chance, it was a little too late. And I don't think there's any harm in having to potentially come wide, maybe if that's the way it works. Lascano suits him very well stylistically, and I thought the two channels, I thought both channels, Channel Maker and Channel Cat coming back, make some sense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Channel Maker ran a pretty good race there in the Bowling Green, and I, again, the longer race, I think, should help him out. And he'll get a good position behind that proven reserve because, I mean, he ran a solid race on the front end when he won the Joe Hirsch. I would imagine that Bill would want him to get, you know, a good position and, you know, maybe get first run on everybody else who's going to try and close.
Talk about the personal ensign, and here's a late coming back again, and she certainly has had some, you know, some interesting summers at Saratoga. thoughts between her and Midnight Bisou, and can anybody upset the one or the other?
It's a very solid race. You know, it's only six, but they're all solid individuals. Some of them, the lesser ones, are coming in off their best races, but I still think it comes down to Bisou and Elate. And I, you know, the one thing that is a little bit concerning to Steve Atherton about Midnight Bisou is that she just hasn't run as well at Saratoga as she's run elsewhere. And I think there is something to be said for that. And I do think that gives Elate a little bit of an edge. She has run very well here. I know she's one win and 2 seconds. You can make a case, though. The 2 seconds both came with a little bit of bumping incidents here, and you know, at least last year, I thought she should have got put up in this race. You know, she's got a body of work this year. That four races were, and granted, two of them were against Midnight Bisou, and she lost to her twice. The quirky stat of there is Midnight Bisou is undefeated at a mile and 16th and shorter, and winless at a mile and 8th and longer. And to me, it's more of a quirky thing than that she just can't get the distance. I mean, you know, she was beating a length and a quarter in the Breeders' Cup just that last year by two very, very good fillies. And as Steve Asher said, the way she was closing, it looked like she wanted more ground. So, I you know, she's a year older. She should be better. I just don't know that that she's going to beat a late at a mile and 8th.
You know, the other Mott, Golden Award, I mentioned her yesterday, and I thought that, you know, the way she won the Shoe V and the fact that she's proven tractable before, I thought she had a little bit of an interesting look as a horse to maybe play around with between the two or among the two. I'm going to use a little Golden Award, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think she's a Julie, and I think obviously Coach Ross are going to be out there. I don't know that they're going to be winging it, but they're going to be, you know, they're going to be forwardly placed, and Golden Award will probably be maybe running with Midnight Bisou in the next flight, and then Elate's going to have to run by them all, and you know, you have to see how the track's playing and how fast they go. But I'd be a little bit surprised if she beat them, but I could see throwing her on a ticket, and you know, the price will be right.
Looking at the Boston Spa, the Grade Two, and do we know what Chad's going to do with 55?
I'm pretty sure 55 is going to scratch out of today and run tomorrow. I got the impression, talking to Peter Brand even before entries were made for these races, that that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to try and talk Chad into it. And I think with Rushing Fall not in the Boston Spa, it made it a little bit more of a sell. Now it'll be interesting to see if Brand runs that horse against his wife's horse, Significant Form, in the race. But I think she'll show up in the race. Now, she hasn't run her better race to Saratoga either, but she seems to be a better horse. Late last year, she turned into a better horse, polishing off her races a lot better than she did earlier in her career.
Well, the other players in here, you mentioned the two Chad operators. There is the third, Martin Schwartz's Masha, second North America after the allowance win earlier in the meet. But I tell you, the two Invaders that both have got nice form from Woodbine, I thought Secret Message running, if she runs back to that Nassau, she's got a real serious look. And Kevin Attard coming in with Starship Jubilee, who does Little Wrong. I thought the two of them are as eligible as anybody.
I like Secret Message. I mean, the last time she ran fourth in the Diana behind three of Chad's very best fillies and mares on the turf. Now, I don't necessarily, you know, he's running good horses. He's not running Sister Charlie and Homerique in Rushing Fall in that race. So, you know, yeah, he's got to deal with Chad again, but, you know, Chad's that are more in line with what Secret Message could probably handle. So I like Secret Message. Graham's had a great meet after a very disappointing meet last year. He's had a stellar meet this year. And, you know, ride the wave, man. I think Secret Message has a big shot.
Well, that gets us to the troika of sprints that start the stake sequence. The fifth, sixth, and seventh, the forego, the ballerina, and the jerkins. And there's really a similar theme, Dave, to all three of these races. You've got 800-pound gorillas, Chancelot, Come Dancing, and Mitoli. Do all three win, or do any and all get upset?
Great question. I wish I knew. I don't know that I call Come Dancing a gorilla, but she's been training very well. I don't like her draft. I wish she would have gone a little bit more on the outside. It's going to force Javier to have to, you know, get her away from the gate running and then see where that puts her. I think there's some other, you know, that minute to stardom is very quick. And he has to avoid a little bit of a duel there. So hopefully he can. And I think me and Mischief is going to be put in for the race as well. So if he can let those two clear and if he can get a decent position outside, then yes, I like the chances. I know Chad's been very high on separation of powers. He said they found, you know, a good routine for her in her training and that they left her at Belmont, and his assistant down there, Whit Beckman, has done a really nice job getting her ready. And, you know, she won the test here. She's 2-for-3 lifetime, you know, including a maiden win by 11 3/4 lengths, so, albeit it's a 2-year-old. So she's dangerous in here. When you go to, Chancelot, great, you know, what happens there? It's all about the break, isn't it there? He broke very well from post 12. Now he's got the inside. You know, he's going to have to break equally as well, because if he doesn't, it'll be quite interesting to see what happens if he happens to get put behind, horses. Hot Creek Hustle has been pointed to this race since the minute he crossed the finish line in the Woody Stevens. I know he was a big price that day, but really, if you look at his one-turn races, they've all been very solid, you know, going back to last year, and even the Pat Day Mile, you know, Mr. Money beat him by 5, but it was still a decent effort, I thought, for that horse. So that horse has been primed for this race. And then another horse, sort of like Owendale, we talked about, out of sight, out of mind, Mind Control. You know, he's coming back to the place with his biggest victory in the Hopeful last year. It looks like he sat nicely when he won the Bayshore. He's had some troubled trips in some races that he was heavily, you know, at least one of the races he was heavily favored to win at Laurel. I'm willing to, you know, with Johnny on there and the horse showing a little bit more of a, Johnny back on, and of course showing a little bit more of a tendency to sit a little bit, I think he's in with a big shot.
You know, by the way, you mentioned Johnny. Johnny literally sleptwalked through the first month of the meet. And then in the last 10 days to 2 weeks, including last week in California, suddenly has come alive. What was that about?
Good question. I don't know. Maybe he still a jet lag from the Ascot trip. I don't know. I really don't.
It's very strange. He was. I mean, absolutely. I'm not somebody that just tosses jocks, but it was getting strange. I mean, the first 4 weeks of the meet, and then just that quickly, it's like a switch was thrown. So, speaking of throwing on a switch, Don Chaitlos looking to put the switch on and get a win too. He's only sent 5 horses out so far under his name, a couple at Belmont and the 3 up here, and Roaten comes back out of the Curlin and turns back to what, you know, really might have been his best intention all along, you know, the Into Mischief for Larry Best. Any feel for Roaten in this spot?
I think he's going the other way. I didn't like his last 2 works, to be honest with you, so I'm a little skeptical that he's going to make an impact in this race.
Finally, the forego, and Mitoli, you know, seemingly going into the Vanderbilt as a slam dunk, and then just that quickly, and I won't even say inexplicably. I mean, because Imperial Hint looked like a winner every step, but clearly looking to right the ship after the Vanderbilt loss that I think stunned everybody.
Yeah, I think there were 2 stunning things about that race: Mitoli's performance and also Imperial Hint, because Imperial Hint had sort of he hadn't really run that great leading up to this, and then he sort of went back to the Wayback Machine and duplicated his Vanderbilt victory from a year ago in this spot here. So, but he's not in this race, and Mitoli doesn't have the rail. Those are 2 big pluses for Mitoli. he gets to be the cat while you know, promises fulfilled, has to be the mouse and go out there and boot scoot out of there. And I think Matoli, I think it's a big confidence. I'm going to take it as a confidence boost that Steve is running him back in this spot rather than waiting for a different race. You know, maybe he's thinking, I don't need to go to the Vosburgh and run against Imperial Hint again, because Imperial Hint, you know, did the same thing in the Vosburgh last year, almost that he did in the, you know, Vanderbilt. So maybe he doesn't, maybe he's looking to not go there, but, and then, you know, a race like the Phoenix or something like that doesn't, impress him. So I think I'm just going to take it as a confidence boost that he's fit to run him back.
You know, a couple of outsiders in here that are, or at least, you know, longer prices. A horse that I have liked and have been impressed with is Killy Beg's Captain. And he's put together, Dave, a really extended string of nice performances, you know, since late last year. And John Terranova's done a great job with this mizzen mast gelding. And actually, he's a horse. He's not a gelding. 5-year-old. And, you know, he's the interloper in here as somebody that you want to mix in with Promises Fulfilled and Matoli.
I don't see it, but
all right. I just always get an effort out of him, and you know, he basically can, you know, for Cancel, this is, you know, this is his big chance and grade one opportunity and so forth. And I think he sets up behind the speed and is, if one of the other, you know, one of the other starts to falter, he's the horse that could boost an exacta. I'm going to use him underneath.
I would be more inclined to use Airstrike than I would be Killy Beg's, but I'm not going to talk you out of it.
Well, and you know, Phil D'Amato was with us the other day, and he didn't mention that he was sending Airstrike east, and not an unfair point, and a horse that he's successfully moved around the chessboard before.
I could see a setup like he got in the Triple Bend where they go really fast. He's back, makes a run, and yeah, you know, and I could see him out finishing your horse to get second to Matoli.
All right. Well, the Forgo and the Ballerina, the Jerkins, the Personal Ensign, Travers, and Sword Dancer, 6 grade ones. Any other thoughts, anything else that everybody needs to know, Dave, from the backstretch?
Well, we just had a ton of workers on the main track there. It was getting pretty, it was almost looking like the Grand Central Expressway. We had like 6 horses across the track at the quarter pole. One worked. We had 6 out of the gate at one point. So there's still plenty of action left even after tomorrow. Then these horses are gearing up for it. Vino Rosso worked today, had a very swift workout. You know, after I speak with you and watch some about 73 turf works, go talk to Todd and see if he's going to run them in the Woodward next weekend or wait for the jockey club. But the way he worked today, I could see them maybe starting to really think about the Woodward. I think Preservation is going to run back in the Woodward, and I see in the Nyer notes that Greenlight Go is going to wheel back in the in the hopeful for Jimmy Durkin.
Well, that's a glowing endorsement from Jimmy. Running them, yeah, that's that. I like it. I like that. Well, we are looking forward to tomorrow, Travers Day, Dave. One more big week, and then the scene shifts back downstate. The summer's gone quickly.
Everyone says that, and I. Not sure I agree, but it's going. I don't know if it's gone that quick, but it's still going.
I love it. I love it. Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig. Dave, thanks so much.
Talk to you, Steve.
See you later. Dave Grenig, folks. Let's take a break. James Scully is in town, and Scully loves coming for Travers, as we told you last week, and we have before. He's got friends here, good friends, and tomorrow he'll have a seminar over at the Trackside Grill. You know, right there at the end of Lincoln, the clubhouse gate, if you've never been to Trackside, for a burger or for breakfast, nice breakfast sandwich. James Scully next, and later, Jay Bridman, Rich Migliori, Mike Beer, Hammer, and Nick Tamaro. Very focused on Travers preview. Nice card. It's going to be a gorgeous day. the highlight of the Saratoga summer. Back after this with Scully.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four plus this, I got that. All right. 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's giving away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapping Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapping tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Listos.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Golden brown, texture like sun, lays me down in my mind. She runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown with Golden Brown. Every time, just like the last, on the ship, tied to her mast. Two distant lands, takes both my hands. Never a frown with Golden Brown.
We're back at the races, reaching for James Scully. And a couple of notes as we do that. And also there's an opportunity we may slip in a visit if time allows. We might get a visit in with Greg Montgomery. And Greg... It's kind of a tradition. Greg will be a visit on the show ahead of Travers Day because he'll be on. I haven't actually seen it written, but he always is. The opportunity to meet Greg and get this year's Travers poster, which is really kind of fun. It's a little different what he did. It's taken from up in the boxes, and it's got a left side framing of the Man of War trophy, the Travers trophy, and then a view up the stretch of horses coming down the stretch. I thought it was pretty cool. And every so often, Greg will do one of these. And so I'm hoping we'll talk to him. He'll be over by the gift shop that's behind the grandstand, just to the right of the carousel. Or the four-star Dave bar, as it were. And for those that are not all that familiar with the building, you got the clubhouse side toward the paddock, and then going down down to your left, up the stretch, there's the pathway that, you know, heads toward the carousel, just opposite actually of the Saratoga Walk of Fame building, you know, what, you know, down the, you know, down that arcade path, where the jocks room is, etc. Greg will be set up there, and he'll be signing the poster for you. So a lot of people, it's not a Saratoga summer if they haven't seen Greg. And for me anyway, it's part of the tradition of Travers Day, going to see Greg and his wife, and see how she's been making out. She had a couple of health concerns over the last, you know, the last few years. And and actually, Kay, it's funny, I just heard from Greg. He will take us. So what we may do is, if we can get Greg in here, we'll get a quick Greg Montgomery visit, and then Jay Pribman at top of the hour, and I'll just shift Scully to a little bit later in the morning. I'm surprised, actually, because James said he thought he'd be either on his way to the racetrack for now, or there by 10-ish. Okay. As we wait for one direction or another, of course, the rough weather down at Virginia. I saw pictures. Woodbury Payne sent me pictures of Colonial, where they got their share of horrific weather. So not just confined to what's going on around here. And they'll try to, you know, they really don't have a lot of margin for error at Colonial with the way the, you know, the schedule is. But so be it. They'll reorganize and get forward into the weekend. Looking also, what else ahead? What have we not mentioned thus far? You got some Jersey action. You got Jersey Bread Steaks at Monmouth this weekend, and Woodbine, the Seaway tomorrow, and then they've got Ontario Breads coming up as well. And a little steak at Gulfstream, the Benny the Bull, a little nice 7-furlong sprint. But really everything focuses on Saratoga. This is all Saratoga tomorrow. You've got a couple of Ohio Bread Steaks as well, Thistledown, and of course Timonium. Don't want to forget that Timonium opens today. All right, so there you go. There's your roundup around the country, and there's Greg Montgomery on the other line. Greg, good morning.
Steve, how are you? What a gorgeous day.
Well, it's about time after a rough week. It's been a little.
Yeah, it really is. But I hear it's supposed to be nice tomorrow too. So I got all of my fingers crossed.
Well, let's get that out of the way. You'll be in your normal installation signing posters tomorrow.
That's right. We will be a guest of Naira or a guest of Center Plate, and we're at the base of the staircase that goes up to the carousel, and that's right behind the Silks accessories shop that's right there in the grandstand. We've been there for years, and we'll have some tables set up, and we're pleased and grateful to be there. So we'll look forward to everyone that we see every year, and anybody that's brand new, we'd love to meet you. And we'll be there from 9 to probably 7 tomorrow night, or Saturday night. So it'll be a grand day.
Without a doubt. And I got to ask you about this year's poster, and I gave everybody an overview of what it's like, and every so often you seem to do these vertical, this sort of vertical approach where there's something in the foreground and then in the background, and I the incorporation of the Man of War Cup, that's a nice wrinkle.
Well, thank you. That was hard to do. I got to tell you, it took all of January, all of February, and about three quarters of March to draw that cup. I tried to draw it more simply. In other words, leave out some of the detail. and it ended up looking like a vase made of glass that was filled with a gold fluid. But it didn't look metal at all, and it sure as heck didn't look like the cup. So I threw those drawings out and started all over. And the thing was, my wife and partner Paula suggested when we, a year ago, practically this week, we were trying to think of what we were going to do to celebrate the 150th running of the Travers. What image would represent the race? And this time it couldn't be a beautiful woman in a hat. It couldn't be a roof line or some architectural feature. It had to be the race. So she suggested the cup, and I hated the idea, but she said, let's have a look and see what you think. So we asked our old friend Dave Smith, the keeper of the cup, if he would, on Travers morning, really, really early last year, if he'd bring the cup out and set it on the counter in the clubhouse and let's just look at it. And when we did that, I noticed immediately that the historic cup was reflecting all the elements of the current track. And that was my bridge to the past. So I said, you know, it may take me 90 days to draw that thing, but it's a good idea. But it's one thing that we've learned over the years is that the horse is the point. The horse is always the hero. Everything in that image has to point you to the horse, which is why we're all here. And so I did an angle on the cup, which allowed me to show a good deal of the track and all the thoroughbreds in the finishing of last year's race. Catholic Boy is the lead horse, and all the other horses, if you look, you'll see all the right silks. And it took us a while to do that. But at any rate, the cup has over 1,000 pieces of detail in it, and it was something, I got to tell you. But at any rate, I think it worked. I have to say, and we very seldom talk about this, but it's selling like crazy. We've been making extra trips to Saratoga to fill orders, and we're just delighted. I'm glad people like it as much as they do, because we certainly do, and it's a privilege to do it.
Well, there's, to me, just an amazing history to your work. And we talk about it, you know, every year that you find, a unique vantage point or an angle or an approach, you know, year after year. And, you know, the building and the backstretch and, you know, the atmosphere, you know, you would think it can only be captured so many times, so many different ways, but you manage to find a unique and something new and fresh, and also colors too, because this is, you know, having that gold, you know, dominate the foreground, is kind of different. This will take its place with all the others.
We're certainly hoping so. I had to thank you very much for that. We work really hard trying to find a way to say how wonderful and how unique Saratoga is. To be honest, when I got here and I moved my family to Saratoga, and right up the street was the racetrack, I had no idea of the stature of Saratoga in the world of racing. I had no idea. I said, well, there's a racetrack. That's what racetracks are like. Well, that's not what racetracks are really like. And so we have over the years figured out that we're not really making quote unquote racing posters. We're making travel posters. We want people to come to Saratoga and enjoy it, the marvel that it is. And we also feel very strongly about the people, the invisible people, the people who make this all possible, the men and women who work on the backside of the track from the middle of the night until late in the day to keep the horses healthy and make the show on the other side of Union Avenue possible. And so we try to go back and forth. Someone asked me the other day, again, how do you decide? And I tell them that generally what happens is that if something happens on Travers, like a dead heat or a thunderstorm that shuts down the track, if something big and monumental, or Arrowgate winning, setting the record, That dictates what we're going to do the next year. But if something like that doesn't happen, then we get to choose. And sometimes we show the paddock, which is my favorite half acre of ground on the planet, or we get to show something from the backside of the track, the folks washing horses or hot walking them. And it's just, as I say, it's a privilege, and you're right, it's hard. We've got 34 in the locker, and 35 is coming up. So what are we going to do? I don't know.
Well, you always manage to pull the rabbit out of the hat. And, you know, should also mention, because I brought it up with Brian Bouye earlier in the meet when we talked about the book that he and Michael Veach did. And the Arrogate image is on the cover of the Travers 150 Years book, too.
Isn't that a great book? I was so proud of him and Michael Veach. I know, because Brian's an old friend, that he's been working night and day on that book for as long as I can remember. There, you know, 149 or 150 chapters, so to speak. When he asked me if I would help him out with some of the artwork, I was just delighted to be part of a book that I think is going to sit on coffee tables for a generation. An interesting story, I think, is that when we got together months and months and months ago to work on the artwork for parts of that book, we talked about doing the image that actually ended up on the back cover of the book. And the name of that image is called Saratoga Tranquility. And it's a view of the grandstands and the clubhouse from the infield and with the lake in front of you. It's a very unusual image. I had to, it was really hard to figure out how to do that. And he wanted, or we discussed, putting famous racehorses between the pond and the grandstands. And then we had to figure out whose silks that would be. And then it got so convoluted that it couldn't possibly be a front cover. And so we decided, well, doesn't it make sense that we use Arrowgate, the record holder, that spectacular horse? So the image that we worked so hard on ended up on the back cover, which I was delighted with, and we used Arrowgate for the front. And that was actually Brian's decision, and I thought it was a great stroke. So I'm delighted. I'm thrilled to be part of that book. And anybody that hasn't seen it, I would recommend that you go out and either buy it or thumb through it, because I certainly have my copy.
Well, I've got that. I've got the wonderful book that the late Vic Zast did with you, the 25 years of Travers Art. Got that up. He's sitting right behind me there. And then countless, you know that I've got countless posters that basically are the definition in art form of Saratoga, and just synonymous. And everywhere you go in this region, and not just this region, it's fun, Greg, when you go to a restaurant somewhere and you see, one of your posters. I always smile, and you know what a fan I am of what you do. It's just tremendous.
Thank you very much. I tell people that this is a very small but very loyal and remarkable fan base that Saratoga has. And I get orders. I get orders from all over the world. I've just sent off a couple of posters to a tiny town in Queensland, Australia.
That's great.
And I've sent them to South Africa. I've sent any place there's a horse fan, and there's a market. And I hear from, because of the internet, because of the internet, I hear from people all over the world, and I ship them off. The big market is Great Britain. The folks in the UK are big horse fans, and so. At any rate, I always say that it's a small market, but it's an intensely loyal one. And I love the people who buy my posters. And we were in a place in Ohio on a trip, and we went in for a hamburger or something, and there must have been 30 posters on the wall in there.
Unbelievable.
And it is. It's great.
That's unbelievable.
I've gotten I've gotten past the point where I need to tell them, hey, I did those posters. But I, but at any rate, I just enjoy the fact that and people like them and put them up. And we are always so delighted when a poster finds a good home.
Well, tomorrow, all day at the racetrack, go see Greg and Paula. How's Paula's health, all right?
Paula is doing really well. She's on a brand new therapy, and they say she's doing spectacularly well. So we'll take that.
Nice.
And we've still got to go to Boston every 6 months to get a check, but she's doing very, very well. And she'll be all dressed up at the track tomorrow, and we hope to see all of our old friends and maybe meet a few new ones.
Exactly. Greg will sign the poster for you, do not miss an opportunity to meet him. And, of course, for those of you that can't be at Saratoga tomorrow, gregmontgomery.com, which has got the entire collection of all of Greg's spectacular art going right back to the beginning. Greg, I always look forward to this visit, and I look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow.
Steve, thank you for this opportunity. It's a highlight of my Travers week, and I'm really glad to talk to you and your huge fan base. So I hope to see everybody tomorrow, and I hope the weather keeps.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about that. You're going to have a gorgeous day. Greg Montgomery, great. Everybody. And one of my, not at all, one of my favorites. And you know what I've done with the posters over the years, I've taken them to, depending on the image. I mean, some of the images, if it's particularly a Travers result, and I've gone to the various trainers and have had them autograph it. One of our favorites, the Birdstone one, with the ominous cloud and the purple and the lighting and the incredible image that the 2005 poster represents, which Greg called Stormbird. And I got Nick to sign it. And I've got the one with a Fleet Express with Jimmy that Jimmy signed. And actually, I've got a couple. You know what? I got to get a – there's a couple that I need to – I had Carl and Ian Wilkes sign the Street Sense Grasshopper, the 2008. I had that one as well. Got that one autographed. It's a an enhancement to an already wonderful souvenir and item that defines the racetrack here and the summers here every year. Greg Montgomery, gregmontgomery.com. If you aren't familiar with what I'm talking about, his artwork, go to the website and you'll be instantly captivated. Jay Pribman standing by. We'll get Jay in here. Hour two. When we come back, Jay and colleague Mike Beer and Rich Migliori in this next hour. Hammer, Scully, and Nick Tamaro, and Ed DeRosa as well. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porschebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porschebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porschebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porschebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9888. 938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
She left me here with Sandy Martin. She played me all night long, but I do it all over again. My sweet summer's gone, and on my mirror she made it clear her lipstick can't be wrong. My summer, summer, my sweet summer is gone.
We're back at the races, and I hate when Casey has to pull this out and play My Sweet Summer is Gone. It's almost gone. It's not completely gone. It's certainly not gone until Jay Privman delivers his thoughts on Travers. Jay, good morning.
That was quite the reach. Good morning. How are you?
I was, you know, you got to bridge, you know, you got to make that, connection somehow. I'm getting there, better and better, you know, certainly we're gonna have a fun culmination of the Saratoga season, the feature for 3-year-olds. But before we talk about it, Jay, how about a little recapping of last week's festivities at Del Mar? What a good day that turned out to be.
No, it was a terrific day of racing, highlighted by Higher Powers' win in the Pacific Classics for John Sadler and Theronis Racing, who have really become the dominant combination the last few summers at Del Mar. And that was their second straight win, as you know, in the Pacific Classic. And, you know, they're right back at it this weekend with the likes of Catalina Cruiser going for his second straight win in the Pat O'Brien. So, but yeah, no, it was a fun weekend last week.
How
Cambier Park chipping in and winning the Del Mar Oaks.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Good one for Chad Brown. He'd been in a bit of a slump. I don't think he'd won a graded stake since, I don't know,
20 minutes earlier.
So early. So
exactly. You know, one of the interesting postscripts I thought to Pacific Classic was that conversation's Monday kind of bookended the morning with Steve Asmussen and John Sadler. And Steve was the first to really, you know, bring up the horses that chipped in Jay and how much up against it they were because of the, you know, the deep, heavy, you know, safer, quote unquote, surface that they're maintaining at Del Mar. And Steve said he was very happy with Tenfold given that. And then as it happens, John Sadler also echoed that and said that he thought the local horses, you know, the horses that were training at Del Mar, you know, had an advantage and that really played out on track.
I think that's the case. I mean, it is it's a deeper surface. It has been for the last couple of years. And, you know, going forward from that, I think it's something that horsemen and handicappers really need to keep in mind when it comes to the Breeders' Cup this year, because the Breeders' Cup will be at Santa Anita, not at Del Mar, but it's maintained in a similar fashion. And I really think it might be prudent for some of the out-of-town horses to get there early and get used to that surface. And it's something for handicappers. That's an aspect of things for handicappers, I think, to keep in mind as well.
How seriously does higher power need to be taken now moving toward Breeders' Cup Classic? Where do you put them in the pecking order?
I'm not sure. You know, he's obviously a much better horse now than he was a few months ago. He certainly has blossomed out here. But, you know, the two top horses in the race just didn't run their race, Seeking the Soul and Quip. So what was behind him was, you know, some horses who were nice horses, but certainly not ones that you would consider as win candidates for the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I think we'll learn a lot more in races like Tomorrow's Travers and see if any of these three-year-olds are stepping forward, or the Pennsylvania Derby. And then, of course, you've got horses like McKinsey, who comes off that nice win in the Whitney a couple of weeks ago. You know, you'd certainly put him at the top of the pecking order right now.
Well, just another terrific job by John Sadler and a horse that they buy from the Horse of Racing Ages sale, $250,000, and they turn him into a Grade One winner. I'm not surprised at any point with the accomplishments of Sadler. This was a terrific performance the way he powered away. Similarly, Jay, on Sunday, how about Phil D'Amato bringing back Prince Earl into a Grade Two win, first start of his four-year-old season?
Well, you deserve a well-deserved victory lap for that. That was a terrific pick, and you spoke that out. Certainly, like you had pointed out, there was no reason to run that horse there with two other candidates already in there, so he was the miner's light was on as to the intention there and how well the horse was doing. And he got a great trip under Giovanni Franco, saved ground. He didn't panic when he had to wait a little bit at the top of the stretch. And then he got between runners early and made a nice run and was up in time to win the race. So certainly an excellent performance coming off of he hadn't run since December. So that was just a really nice win for them. Sharp Samurai ran a solid race to be second, and, you know, Grecian Fire was third. Bowie Cyril ran into a little bit of traffic trouble late in the race, but I honestly don't think it cost him the victory. I think Prince Earl was best.
Well, and, of course, we're keeping an eye on the two-year-olds as well, and Ginobili on Saturday, that heady group, including the two Bafferts, Hydrogen, the debut of Honor AP, Sheriffs, obviously, has got a serious one as well, because there was no reason that Honor AP should have been that competitive going six furlongs. And so that will be a race that we'll come back to into September, Jay. We got to watch everybody that ran out of that's going to run out of that race.
Yeah, like I told you, you had asked me about that race last week, and I remember telling you that I thought Honor AP was kind of a lumbering sort, and he was going to be better with more distance. I
yes.
saw that the first eighth of a mile with him. It just takes a while to get going, but once he gets going, it's pretty impressive, and he finished off that race quite well to be second behind Ginobili, and I think he's going to be even better, obviously, when he goes two turns. He's just that kind of a horse. He just he takes a while to get going, but I don't think distance is going to I don't think there's any distance you could write that's going to get in the way of that horse.
Yeah, the two-year-old racing, and I went. I've got both your and Dave's preseason two-year-old compendiums, and those horses all starting to, you know, make their presence felt as the summers wind down on both coasts. Speaking of winding down on the coast, here tomorrow, Jay, the Travers, and it's a fun cast of 12. Run them down for us.
Well, I mean, like you said, it's probably a wide-open race. You've got horses coming from the Haskell and the Jim Dandy and the Kerwin, so chipping in from other points, so it's a good race. I mean, I think he could go a number of different directions here. A lot of it's going to be based on trips, and certainly the horse coming from California, Mucho Gusto, while he wouldn't be my top pick, I think the race comes up good for him from a pace standpoint. There's not a lot of just real sharp speed, I don't think, in the race, and that's going to help his chances. You know, he's stepped in at the last second. He worked great on Monday, and you know, Baffert, as you know, is one to call an audible, and there was just really no reason to sit on this horse for a few more weeks and wait for the Pennsylvania Derby. So it was time to go, and especially when I think the best three-year-old in that barn, Game Winner, who I think would have been extremely tough in this race, had an unfortunate spike of a fever last week, and it just took him out of training for a few days. And, you know, analogous to what happened with Omaha Beach, it's not a serious thing, but it's certainly poorly timed, and it prevented him from being able to run there. But you know, you can obviously make cases for Tax and Tacitus and you know, Highest Honors, who I liked last time when he won the Kerwin. And I think Owendale is a top horse. He's just continuing to get better and better. And Code of Honor, I mean, I could just see this race flopping a number of different ways. If you said you got to make a top pick, I think I would go with Owendale. I just think he's really been smartly managed. I think he's a much better horse now than he was around the time of the Preakness. When he ran, I thought, a deceptively good race owing to the track profile that day. And I like where he drew for the Travers. So I would make him my tepid top pick in a wide-open race.
Well, and you should get, you know, you should get a square price as well, just because there's so many camps that have pitched tents, Jay. I mean, there's going to be the Chad Brown camp that's going to bet Bikinis or Highest Honors or both. Baffert, sure to take money. Everybody's universal, you know, horse to beat, quote-unquote, is Tacitus. How do you not respect Shug and Code of Honor? I mean, that's what makes this really an intriguing group. I mean, I suppose I wish there was a little bit more pace to guarantee, you know, an honest opportunity for everybody, you know, for horses that, you know, may come with one run. But I won't be surprised by any, honestly, by almost any combination to make up a superfecta here. It's really a race that deserves for, you know, for people to be excited about in anticipation.
No, very much so, and that's why, you know, the pace is definitely going to be against Owendale. I'm just hoping he can overcome it. And for my sequential wagers at Saratoga tomorrow, I will definitely use both Mucho Gusto and Owendale, and then have several others as B level kind of horses. But those are my top two. But I'll take Owendale slightly over Mucho Gusto. But the pace really does come up well for Mucho Gusto.
Speaking of Baffert and horses that you know, had delays to their campaign, will wait for Game Winner and Omaha Beach. I know Mandela was pretty relieved how quickly Omaha Beach snapped back, and you reported the other day, you know, that Mandela expected him to get back to the track yesterday or today, and so he's moving back toward a start. And I guess what the Awesome Again, right, has got to be the circled on the calendar for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no better option for him if he wants to be in the Breeders' Cup. There's just not a good... I mean, the only other thing would be to potentially ship to the Pennsylvania Derby, but I just can't see that being done for his first start off of a layoff. There's pros and cons to everything. And the big con for the Awesome Again is that you'd have to run against older horses. But you get an extra week and you don't have to ship. So, and you're going to be running over the track where the Breeders' Cup is. So
exactly.
It just seems like that's the best option. But, the shared belief last week was, or excuse me, this week was the best. I mean, it's just such a perfect race. And that's why you see a horse like Improbable in there, because it's just, it's a three-year-old only race. It's a great way to sort of get started back off of a layoff and then see what there is down the line. But unfortunately, Omaha Beach is not going to be able to participate.
Well, you mentioned Improbable, and he is participating. And Jerry Hollendorfer and Michael Stinson ended up deciding to stay at home with King Jack, who had been rumored and considered for the Alan Jerkins. And they're the two principals with a little bit of Lieutenant Dan. We'll see if Miotti, what he's going to do, because he is cross-entered in the Pat O'Brien as well. But he could take advantage of the three-year-old restriction. It's a question of whether he wants to go the one turn or the two turns.
No, and he's good around both, but I would think running against three-year-olds looks like to me a smarter move than going against the likes of Catalina Cruiser and that bunch. But we'll see what they decide to do. In terms of that race Sunday, I mean, obviously Improbable, it'll be his first start since the Preakness, and see if he gets back going. King Jack, I think just he's only had two starts, and I think it would have been a lot to go back and run at Saratoga in a grade one against horses who are far more seasoned. And the way Chancelot won the Amsterdam, you'd really be up against a horse with just tremendous speed and a home court advantage. So this just seemed like a better way to kind of move King Jack along, and he can run against the big boys in another month or two. I think this was a smarter move for right now. And then that's on Sunday is the shared belief. Tomorrow, of course, is this we're talking about is the Pat O'Brien, the 7/8 race for older horses. And Catalina, talking about horses who might have gone to Saratoga, Catalina Cruiser was under consideration to go to the Forgo, because one thing that hasn't happened yet with Catalina Cruiser, Steve, is he still hasn't won a grade one race. He's 5 years old now. He hasn't run a lot because he got started late in his career. He's only had 7 runs, but he's won 6 of them, but he's never won a grade one. He's had multiple grade two victories, and that was the allure for the Forgo, but they just didn't really want to ship him. And they just thought to move him along towards the fall and potential grade ones and Breeders' Cups that it was just smarter for him, for this horse, as Sadler told me the other morning, to stay home and run in the Pat O'Brien. So that's what they're going to end up doing. But this came up a good race as well. You've got American Anthem, who comes off a win over the track and is 2-for-3 at Del Mar Lifetime. And Giant Expectations is making his first start since he went back to New York and ran in the Commentator and just was his best on the day. He had that horrible stumble at the start, and he grabbed a couple quarters, and he's trained really well here coming into this race, and he's run well over this track before. In fact, 2 years ago, he won the Pat O'Brien. So you've got the last two winners of the race in here with Giant Expectations from 2 years ago and Catalina Cruiser, the defending race winner.
Well, a penultimate weekend of action on both coasts. The two-year-olds certainly take focus next week with the Hopeful and the Futurity and Del Mar Deb, etc. Jay, the summer is whizzing by, obviously, and we'll see what comes of Travers and the Jerkins and everything else here and out there as well. And we'll kind of wrap it all up next week. I can't believe how fast this has gone by.
No, it's gone by really, really fast. But hopefully we'll have some good racing this weekend and next and have some good memories for the summer.
Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman getting ready for a return to the fall as things start to point toward Breeders' Cup. And those fields really will start to come into focus. That point hit home, Jay, when I saw the Jimmy Gluckson credential request to come in this week. I said, oh, all right, the lamp is lit. It's time to get ready and start to organize your Breeders' Cup thoughts. So that's what we're doing. But there's a few orders of business before we get there. Thanks so much. Jay Prippen. Let's take the break. And we're right back on time, actually. And Rich Migliori. I promised Mig the 25 slot. So let's get Mig in here. We'll get his thoughts. He's been watching all of the local three-year-olds, get ready. So Mig and Mike Beer to fill out the hour. Hammer, I think we're gonna try to put Scully and DeRosa together. That's probably the right thing to do, Case, in the 11 o'clock hour, because we're not gonna have time for independent visits. So we'll do some ping-ponging with them. And Nick Tamro to close out. Second week in a row, we've brought Nick in as the closer. Back after this, Rich Migliori.